Good evening. James McCanney here with my Science Hour. Going right into the show tonight, June 2nd, 2011. And a major number of topics to talk about tonight. A new item that I'll have pretty soon. I want to prime people for this new item that I will have available in a couple weeks. And something that you would need in any type of emergency. Now, the things I have on my webpage so far, the pre-filter, the water filters, book information, and by the way, I'll be talking a little bit more about availability of freeze-dried food. That had gone away for a while. That will be back. But this new item, I think you're going to find it very interesting. I've been working on this for a while in the background, and it's something that literally everybody needs. So I'll just leave it with that. I'll try and prime the your mind, so to speak. If you had an emergency, what would you need? Well, you would need shoes, but no, I'm not going to sell shoes. So what else would you need? These are major things that you cannot find any place else, things that you would absolutely need. So at any rate, think about that. What would you absolutely need in case of emergency? Say it was a Planet X coming in. Say it was a political emergency. Say it was a volcano going off that blocked out the caused major let's say weather changes or something like that, and all of a sudden let's say a solar flare that might disrupt our infrastructure. What is something that you would absolutely need? And most people, I don't think, will be able to imagine this when I tell you what it is. It'll be coming in a couple weeks. It'll actually be available. And what would you need most? And a lot of people might say, "Well, a radio." Well, no, you wouldn't. You wouldn't. You wouldn't. You might need a radio, but I'm not going to sell a radio. It's not what I'm thinking of. It's something. Let's put it this way. It's something that is not available anywhere at all right now. It's a something that I've put together that is absolutely necessary, but you can't find it any place else. Shoes you could buy someplace else, radios you could get someplace else. The pre-filter you won't be able to find any place else, but that's already available on my webpage. What is something that you would need, absolutely need, if there were an emergency? And as I said, it could be an emergency, it could be a political situation, it could be a tornado coming through your hometown, and it's just you and your immediate neighbors that were having a problem. What is something you would need that you cannot find anyplace else? In fact, it hasn't even been put anyplace on the market. The conception of this hasn't been available. So anyway, I will leave it with that. I'll be talking about that on the future shows until this is finally released, but just priming my audience to get ready for something. Just a little bit on the typhoon. Last week I talked about the typhoon moving through Japan, and I looked at historical tracks of typhoons in the Pacific. They do go westerly, and they will swing north and then back to the east. That's in fact, in the Atlantic, that's not an uncommon path for hurricanes in the Atlantic also, where they will go west, then swing north, and then swing back east with the northern jet stream and the northern climate movements moving them back easterly. But the typhoon in Japan seemed to be quite a bit different in that it went completely over the island, drenching it, and then picking up water from around Japan and bringing it up into the jet stream. And that was the point I was making, that this polluted, radiation-filled water is going up into the jet stream, and gee, I wonder where that ends up. In the United States, I've talked before about the situation with water in coming up into the upper atmosphere, the lack of reporting, the lack of real reporting with the government agencies that are supposed to be monitoring this for both our country, for Canada, and then as it passes over the United States, it keeps on going on to Europe. European stations monitoring and finding radiation in their environment, but no longer in the United States. So the number one point, you're not going to get information from government-supplied sources, from the agencies that should be monitoring for your health and benefit. So the only thing you can do, and people have asked me if I could do monitoring. Monitoring the environment is an extremely difficult thing to do. It takes a tremendous amount of equipment. It takes a tremendous amount of coordination and man hours. So it's something extremely difficult to do because, as I talked about before, the radiation just doesn't blanket the entire United States or Canada at one time. It may come in on the jet stream, and the jet stream may dip down at one point, and then the rain comes in and drops it on a certain area. So that radiation concentrates at a given time in a certain area. Very difficult to track and understand all these factors, and then to imagine where this is being dumped in the United States or in Canada or in Europe, in Hawaii and Alaska. Alaska is another prime target for the Japanese radiation. So it's very difficult to monitor unless you have the resources of the government, and if the government isn't doing it, if they're sidestepping or blindsiding or keeping the information from the public by false statistics or lack of monitoring, as the old expression goes, if you don't look for it, you won't find it. And that's the case with the Japanese radiation. And so now many people have already purchased the pre-filter. This sets on top of your standard water filter. It fits any of the standard production water filters and is effective at taking out the dust that holds the radiation. And typically radiation is attached to dust particles, and that's how it's carried in the upper atmosphere. And so the pre-filter is effective, but many people have asked me details on how to use the pre-filter, how to know when you might change the powders in the pre-filters. These are medical food-grade powders that go into the pre-filter. How would you know to change those if you're just dealing with, say, radiation? Well, the situation with radiation is like this. The main reason you would change out the powders is if you had something like oil or sludge or, let's say, river water from a muddy river, and it just completely saturated the powder so it didn't flow anymore. That would be a reason for throwing out your powder and putting in new powder in the pre-filter. And so within the case of radiation, it's really small amounts. Radiation is very dangerous in small amounts, so you want to remove it before it goes into your nice, clean water filter. And as I said, this fits any of the standard production line mark makes and models of water filters, the stainless steel, and I won't mention others. Of course, I sell the Dalton, but understand that all of these models, makes and models, were pretty much copied off the original Birkfelds, which came out of England. So the pre-filter was designed to fit all of these, including the plastic filters that I sell online. But the point is, many people have asked, how do they know when to change the powders in the case of radiation? And in that case, you really don't have to change it very often at all. The real reason you change powder in the pre-filter and throw it out and put new powder in the pre-filter, the reason you do that is because it just doesn't flow anymore. And as I said, the dust that contains the radiation is attached to dust, that's in very small amounts. So let's take an example. In the wintertime, snow particles are attached, or have a dust particle that they generate from a dust particle. Every snowflake has a small dust particle in its central core region. So that's the kind of same type of dust that you will find in rain that is pouring in. A lot of cities you'll see where pollution is, for example, air pollution. You will see bridges where water flows. You'll see it. It just looks dirty. That's all. And there's a reason for that, because there's soot and other pollutants, dust and particle pollutants in the water, and it flows and it stains that area where the water will flow on a bridge, embankment, the side of a building. And that's why a lot of cities look dirty, is because that water is there. It depends on the pollution levels. But it's the same situation with just dust in the atmosphere. That could be dust from a field. It could be dust from the Sahara Desert that's blowing around the world, blows over Japan, the radiation goes up in the air, it attaches to that dust, and then is carried over to the United States. It's that dust that you are filtering. You're not really filtering the radiation atoms themselves, the radioactive atoms. They are attached to dust. And unless your filter becomes so plugged up with dust that it just doesn't filter anymore, the pre-filter, then you would, if it's that plugged, then throw out the powder. But typically, if it's just dust, if you have clean water, relatively clean water, you don't have to change the pre-filter very often. If you're currently getting water from well water, or for a city, for example, the radiation probably has not penetrated to that level yet. Although it could in certain areas. Just say this: you were in an area where you were the rainwater really dumped the radiation into your area. That could flow down and get into the water table. It's really difficult to say. It's an extremely difficult thing to track. And as I said, you need extreme amount of resources. The government does have the resources to do this, but they're simply ignoring it. They're pretending that this doesn't exist and there's no problem. I've talked about that in previous shows. I'm not going to concentrate on it tonight. The main thing I wanted to tell you tonight is how to change the powders in your pre-filter in the case of radiation. In that case, you simply, as I said, unless it's so plugged up with powder or dust or other pollutants that it just doesn't flow anymore, then change the powders. And somebody asked me about measuring radiation. Could you take a Geiger counter and measure the radiation? And the real answer is no. Measuring radiation is a very difficult thing to do. It's cumulative. Let's take the example of food. Somebody's eating food that has a low level of radiation in it. That radiation is going to accumulate in the human body over time. So you couldn't walk up to the plate of food and put a Geiger counter up to it and detect radiation and say, gee, don't eat that plate of food. If you could detect radiation out of a plate of food, there is so much in the environment that many more things are polluted. That's why it's very scary that 10 days after the Fukushima generator went under and basically had a meltdown, expelling a great deal of radiation both into the atmosphere and into the groundwater in Japan. 10 days later, they were already able to measure the radiation in milk in the state of Oregon. Other states, South Carolina, I believe, other states had very short time afterwards already detected radiation in milk, which meant the cows had to eat the grass. The grass was digested. The cow made milk, and it was measurable on the table. That is telling you there's a lot of radiation in the environment, and that's going to continue for a long time. Okay, May 21st, a number of days ago, there was another comet that hit the sun. The sun belched out an absolutely enormous CME, coronal mass ejection, before the comet hit the sun, and in true NASA style, they are clueless. They think, oh, gee, this big solar eruption happened, and there just happened to be another comet handy. At the time, They have no clue that these comets cause the solar eruptions. I talked about one and actually posted it on my webpage, the video of the one, I forget the date. And as I said, we have hundreds and hundreds of these videos of the comets coming in near the sun. Extreme, some of them you even see the spark going between the comet and the sun. And then you see the tremendous explosion coming out of the sun, right where the comet is, and inevitably they'll say, oh, coincidence. Hundreds and hundreds of these coincidences where a comet just happens to be there when a big flare comes out of the sun. But a tremendous flare. I hope to get that video on my webpage. I'm a little bit I'm not in my studio right now. I'm out in a somewhat remote region transmitting tonight's show, and not at my home studio, so it makes it a little difficult to post some of these things. But I do hope to get the video of that comet up there. Another announcement, and if you listen to other talk show hosts, they've talked about the E. coli outbreak in Europe, where apparently Spain had the outbreak, and a new strain of E. coli, and this is the part I want to talk about, that a new strain of E. coli is now in food in Europe, coming out of Spain. Well, how do new strains of E. coli come to be? Well, it's probably your guess is as good as mine that it came from the U.S. military, what I'll call soup kitchens, where these concoctions of viruses and bacteria are produced in laboratories. And then you can imagine the strange people that are out there placing this on food for people to get sick. And that's these type of events are too common in these in recently to call just random in what would you call biological mutations of things like E. coli. So at any rate, there may be a time in the future when food is just not safe to eat, making what you might call scare tactics for food. I'll be talking a little bit about food in a minute. I'll have some limited supplies of Mountain House food available. I just did some phone calls or was on the phone a bit today. And so here's the situation. Let me just say this before I forget it. I will have limited quantities of freeze-dried Mountain House. This is the Mountain House freeze-dried food, and I'm able to get my hands on some supplies, and this will be in the warehouse ready to ship. There won't be any waiting other than just the time to put these, package them, put a label on them, and send them out to whoever is the person that buys them. So in other words, what happened before is we just had fairly large supplies, sold them, and then the sales just outstripped the ability to get more product in. It took a while just to ship them because of the tremendous demand and the high level of ordering that was going on. And we pretty much caught up. There's a few orders that are still have some things back ordered, but very few. So here's how we're going to work it in the future. I will make announcements. Keep tuned to my webpage if you're interested in this, and these will be cases of the number 10 cans. Those are the large coffee can size cans of Mountain House freeze-dried food, and then I will post them on my sales page. I'll make an announcement on the main homepage, jmccsci.com, and you can go there. Typically, there will be a limit on how many cases a person can order. Right now, there's one of the cases that just came available. It's the 60-day meat and veggie case. And so those will be available. And I have a limited number available to sell. Those will be on the webpage available. And when the 50 cases are gone or 60 or whatever available in the warehouse, then it will simply be pulled down and not be available anymore. So keep your eyes posted And many times there will be a limit of 3 cases per customer or something like that. So keep tuned, and if you're interested in those, keep your eye on the web page and keep your listening to this show so you will know what's available. I understand that there is some other meat items coming down the road here very soon, but I won't pre-announce them until they're here and available. But that's the way the future will work with the food. We will only sell what's sitting in the warehouse, and when it's sold, then we will pull the sales ticket down from the order button, down from the order page, and it will not be available until we get the next shipment in of whatever it is. Sometimes it might be chicken meat. Sometimes it might be a mix of meat and veggies in a case, and anything that will be there will be described. And as I said, you will have to get the first come, first serve, first come, first serve. Whoever gets there first will be able to order it. And when it's gone, it's gone. We'll take the link down to that particular item. And then you'll have to wait till the next item comes in. Okay, so anyway, just a quick note, Gmail, this came out today. Government, top government officials in the United States, their email accounts were hacked into. Homeland Security doesn't really know who has done this. They're blaming it on the Chinese, but I don't think they have any clue as to who did it any more than the man in the moon. But they're blaming it on Chinese and other Asian. It's always the Asians that did it. When it comes to computing, that's an easy one, but it could have been little Johnny down the street for all they know. They have no idea. But the Gmail accounts of top officials were broken into, and they have no idea what kind of information may have been compromised. So they're just looking into this, but that raises the question, what on earth in this day and age of identity theft and cyber attacks, what on earth are our top U.S. officials doing using Gmail? Doesn't the government have a secure computing system where they can have their own email system and control it? They're using Gmail for top level government U.S. officials. Is that crazy? It's the most bizarre thing I've ever heard of. I wouldn't use Gmail to for my dog. I don't think it's secure. It's like public information. Who knows who has access to this? Not to mention the ability of third graders to hack into these systems, which use the firewalls and other defense systems, which are not bulletproof at all. But why would top U.S. officials be using Gmail is my question. Absolutely absurd, which leads up to another question. There was a breach in security this past week. Let me go to my file. Lockheed Martin says they're claiming they thwarted a tenacious cyber attack this past week. They are the Pentagon's top supplier with everything from submarines to satellites, military satellites, and everything in between. Lockheed is the major contractor for the Pentagon. And their systems were hacked into. They used the RSA codes, EMC RSA codes, based on prime numbers. And there again, why on earth is a company... First of all, why would they even allow their systems to be on the internet and available for hackers to try and get into? But secondly, why would they depend on RSA codes that are extremely vulnerable now that it's extremely easy to calculate prime numbers? These systems are vulnerable, and in fact, the RSA company itself was hacked into not too long ago. They don't like to talk about these things, but security in computing is a giant mess. But what's going on? Well, the RSA, there must be major contracts dealing with this, and they want their money, they want their contracts, And so they're trying to hide the fact that these are extremely vulnerable systems. So at any rate, it goes along with the Gmail, U.S. top officials using Gmail. How ridiculous. But the point is that in a few weeks, I haven't completely put the entire show together, but I've pre-announced this. I will be talking about RSA encryption, and I will be showing how easy it is to break RSA encryption codes on my show. Apple's computers, 4G, the iOS, their fourth generation iOS was broken by a Russian company that does that for a business, a forensic company. They broke the Apple, basically the iOS of Apple. And they're going to publish it. And one might think, well, why are they going to publish this? Isn't that, why wouldn't they just keep it secret? Well, the point of publishing it is the same reason why I published my Calculate Primes book. The reason you publish something like this is to make it public, because the company is promoting an insecure product. And the reason you publish it is because you have to take the lid off this and let the public know. And the only way the public's really going to understand how vulnerable they are with these products is by publishing the information. Then the public can readily see. That's why I published the Calculate Primes book. That's why it was extremely top secret before that book was published a number of years ago. I think it was 2007. Because that book had to be distributed and sold. It sold very well initially, like all my books do. It sold very well out of the chute. And so it was distributed literally all over the world before anybody could put the lid on it. And oddly enough, some of the very first people who purchased the book were security engineers, physicists and engineers from Lockheed Martin, who worked on secure satellite transmissions and securing our national defense satellites. And they were extremely interested in the fact that now you could readily calculate prime numbers, because that meant one thing, and one thing very clearly, that you could break the RSA codes very quickly and easily. They were no longer safe. RSA had competitions on the internet where they had some very large numbers, and they wanted people to break the key of these very large numbers. In other words, to find the prime factors of these. There would be two of them. And with the new system of calculating prime numbers that made it into almost child's play, there again raises the question, why would Lockheed be using the RSA codes for the security systems on their computing systems that have very sensitive national information? But there again, if you look at this, you have to understand that these secure systems are, it's a very complicated international game of moving technology from one country to another, to maintain the balance of power, and that's the way the bankers maintain control. So it's an extremely complicated topic. Not going to go into all of that tonight. Just wanted to let you know that these companies, there's hacking into things is getting easier and easier. Anybody who lives by encryption will also die by encryption. There are no good secure encryption systems on the market today. And that's something I know a lot about. I worked in that for many years in the telecommunications industry, and I know a lot about that particular topic, and I happen to know probably more about prime numbers than most people on the planet, and how vulnerable prime numbers are to how poor a judgment or how poor a basis they are for running computer security or transmission security in computing. The magnetic North Pole is moving faster than before. So I wanted to talk, these are scientific facts. They simply can measure this. Every year the North Pole the magnetic North Pole is determined and then plotted, so you can watch it moving. It right now is moving up in the Canadian, north of the Canadian Northwest Territories, and migrating very rapidly up towards the geomagnetic pole, which is the celestial pole, so to speak. When the Earth rotates, if you took your fingers or pins and you put them one at the North Pole and one at the South Pole, these are the rotational poles of the Earth, and spun the Earth, that would be the rotational poles of the Earth. Now, the magnetic pole does not align with that. It's off by, in fact, quite a distance. So, first of all, why is the magnetic pole different from the North Pole? Well, that's due to the fact that Earth had a major pole shift. This is a physical pole shift within the last 10,000 years, and the old North Pole physically on Earth would have been somewhere north of the state of Michigan in the territory of Ontario in Canada. That's where the old North Pole was. And so it appears that that celestial North Pole, that rotational North Pole, had been there for a very long time, and so it appears that the magnetic pole was very well aligned at that time. When the rotational pole moved up to where it is now, the magnetic pole stayed where it was. So that's why the difference. And so they're slowly migrating. The magnetic North Pole is migrating up to where the true celestial rotational North Pole is. And by the way, this is not going to cause the Earth to shift. There's a big misnomer in the world of discussion of pole shifts that these are magnetic in nature. No, not at all. They're simply gravitational. When large celestial objects come by, the major component of a pole shift is in the gravitational wave of the large passing object, causing the surface, the crust, and mantle of Earth to shift. This is explained with diagrams and in text in my pamphlet, Surviving Planet X Passage, how this works and how the Earth's poles were shifted and over the past 10,000 years. And these things don't just jump up and do this by themselves. They need outside input. The example I always use is the example of an acrobat or a gymnast who jumps up and say is in a gymnasium, they run along, they do flips and jumps, and then they come down and land. Well, let's take that person out into free outer space where there's no mat, there's no earth, there's no gravity, and let's ask that person to start doing flips and cartwheels and other types of gymnastic movements. And the result is that they can't do it. And why is that? That's because there's no mat, there's nothing, there's no friction, there's nothing to work against, nothing to push against. Or if the person in outer space were rotating, they would continue to rotate forever. There was no way to stop them from rotating, if you understand what I mean. So the same situation is true of Earth. Earth just doesn't stop rotating and start rotating the other way and flip poles all by itself. It's simply not physically possible. So something has to come along and induce, in this case, a gravitational wave into the surface so that it would cause a migration of the surface plates of the Earth, causing mountains to build overnight, causing plates to shift around, causing things that were under the ocean to rise up and things that were above the ocean to fall down below the surface of the ocean. Tremendous amount of Earth movement, especially at the surface, when these things happen. So at any rate, that's a little discussion. So why is the magnetic North Pole moving in more rapidly now? It appears that it's trying to get back to home, so to speak. The magnetic pole will someday be back all the way to the North Celestial Pole, where it will probably sit for a very long time, unless we have another intruder, a Planet X type of object, coming into the solar system. I want to do a quick solar report. Right now I'm looking at the last week of solar activity, and it's been absolutely incredible. The sun is booming. As I said, on the 21st, we had another comet come in, another massive CNE, but the sun has been extremely active, extremely explosive, and the winds, the earth winds, the winds on the surface of the earth continue. No matter where you have been over the past weeks, I suspect, and I can pretty much guarantee you that it's been very windy, whether the wind has been from the north or the south or the east or the west, or a combination of those, it has been very windy. I was in my car today being blown by a nice westerly wind, getting very good gas mileage with my car, riding a 40-mile-an-hour wind from the west. And that changed a little earlier. It was from the north. So these winds are rotating, but the point is that the surface winds of Earth, very powerful, very strong, and that is a direct result of the solar activity that has been going on really for really many months now. The storm activity we saw across the United States, tremendously powerful storms that wreaked incredible amounts of havoc on the United States. The typhoon that was going into Japan, the Pacific Ocean just boiling with tremendously powerful storms. North of Australia, the Indian Ocean, the central equatorial region of Africa just churning with powerful storms as those rolled off the western coast of Africa, dipping down through Venezuela, through Colombia, through Ecuador, very far south, and then swinging up and driving the weather patterns in the Caribbean from the western side. Very, very unusual, but very powerful weather on Earth. In fact, it was about 2.5 weeks ago I thought to myself, you know, I want to take a little trip, just a little excursion to get away. And the weather where I was at the time was not the best. In fact, the tornadoes were coming through quite regularly. I thought, I'm going to get on the internet and I'm going to search the weather maps and the weather data, and I'm going to pick a sunny place, just a nice sunny place, and I'm going to go there. And it turned out there was no place to go. Literally, I could have flown any place. I could have driven to any place. I could have taken a train. I could have taken any form of transportation to get to that wonderful sunny place that I was looking for. But there was no place in the 48 states. There was no place in the Caribbean. There was no place in Canada. There was no place anywhere on the planet to go to. That includes China, that includes, not that I was going to go to China just for a sunny day, but literally I started looking at this phenomenon, and I said, there's got to be some sunny place that would have stable weather for at least a few days someplace on Earth. And I looked, and I looked, and I looked, and I looked day after day after day, thinking, well, this will change, and it didn't. It stayed like that. So we have been getting tremendously powerful weather over the number of weeks and months here, and it has not let up. So at any rate, just a little bit on the solar report. The Earth weather right now is calming down a little bit, although, as I say, we're getting still fairly significant surface winds. Which makes one wonder why we are using oil in our gas-guzzling automobiles when there's this much energy flowing around the Earth. And by the way, this wind energy is a direct result of the driving forces that come from the sun and the solar wind. Okay, just a quick product review. I've already talked about the pre-filter. But I want to let people know we are struggling to keep these in stock. The ordering has been very heavy. I try and look at and project and then order, and it's been as the items come in to put together the pre-filters. And by the way, this is the only place you're going to find pre-filters like this. As the items come in to put these pre-filters together, they are sold pretty much by the time these are all put together, and then we're ordering more. And I think at some point the pre-filters are going to just be sold out, and we'll have to pull them off the web page as far into the future as we can see, and then put them up once we get restocked. But we're just barely keeping up at this point. If you're looking for those a pre-filter, I would order it now and get in. We are keeping ahead, but just barely. And as I say, we're not going to let it go to what had happened last August, where we were simply had, you know, many times the orders of what was in stock, and it took us a while to catch up. That's not going to happen anymore. If you're able to order your on the web page, then the what you're ordering is going to be available. So, and when that's not the case, we will actually pull the links down so they're not, certain people are not able to order anymore. And that could be happening fairly soon. So if you're interested in a pre-filter, I would go to the web page and order it now, to make sure you get in under the wire. The books, all of the books are in reprinting right now. We've actually run out of the Calculate Primes book. Very heavy ordering in the last 2 to 3 months on all of the books. So I love to see that, but also it's just it's a strain on the system when they all come due at the same time. So anyway, all of the books are being reprinted, but they're still available. And hopefully all of the reprints will hit before we run out of those once again. If they're not available, we will pull the link down from the web page. I just wanted to mention also the flax is quite available. I should mention that, and so that we have a good stock of flax in the warehouse. That's one of the items that I recommend everybody have, a case of flax. I put that back up. We had a little issue with the cost of shipping going up on flax, and I think that's been resolved. So the flax items are back on the web page available. And as I said, keep an eye out for the Mountain House freeze-dried food number 10 cans. Right now I'll be posting very shortly after this show, certainly within the next day or so. It's the 60-day meat and veggie case, and these will be available in cases of 3 lots only. In other words, you have to order 3 and no more than 3 cases of these at a time. And the 3 cases would be $633, but we're giving you $25 off of that. This includes free shipping to the 48 states. We're going to charge a little bit more to Alaska and Hawaii just because of the increased cost of shipping to those locations. But free shipping, 3 cases of the 60-day meat and veggie. Anyway, go to the webpage when that's posted. We'll probably be able to sell, I don't have the exact number, but it's a limited amount. And when that's gone, we'll pull the link down. Okay, so I've already talked about the winds continuing. A topic that I'm going to start dealing with extensively is the telecommunications mess in America. It's very unfortunate for a lot of people. Let's take an example of the average person, family. You have a landline to your house. Maybe you have internet coming in an area where there's a... You can probably hear the sirens here. And it's not due to tornadoes. I don't think I'm going to blow away here, and I'm not sure why there are sirens, but... At any rate, there's a loud siren going off, so I suspect you can hear that on the air. What was I saying? Oh, the telecommunication situation. Examine the situation for an average family. They have a landline phone that's on the wall at home or in the kitchen and a number of phones around the house. Okay, well, now the phone companies have been selling television service through that, through their distribution network. They have internet. Most of them will sell you DSL. Many times reliable, good service. But what happens is your bill all of a sudden becomes, can be very many, many hundreds of dollars for your phone service. Okay, well that's okay, but now you need a cell phone, and you need a cell phone for everybody in your house. Say you have an average American family, a husband, wife, and two kids. Just imagine the average American family with four cell phones going on one plan. That can run between $200 to $300 for those four people, just to keep them in cell phones. Maybe a little bit less if you're on the economy plan, but typically people have unlimited text and voice and talking, and so at least that will, for four phones and the family plan, run you up to a couple $100. And if you have internet, if you have little Johnny or little Susie has an iPhone or a internet-ready phone, then those bills can run up quite a bit. So easily you're running a couple $100. But add all this together, and you're pushing $400 to $500 a month for communications. What was once upon a time $35 for the family phone per month, now you have features, and all of this is good. But you have to ask the question, how long is this going to last? How long can the American public continue to pay $400 to $500 a month just to talk to one another? Businesses, the communication bill is going through the roof simply to communicate. So they're trying to find more efficient ways to communicate. But many of those less expensive methods, voice over IP, etc., are not that reliable. So anyway, it's a situation that there are many, many companies. And here's where we get into what I call the telecommunications mess. Say you have your phone home service with one company, then you have your cell phone service. You might have it with the same company or another company. And then what happens when you go on a trip or you have a company and you supply all of your salespeople or employees who travel with a certain type of phone? All of a sudden, they go to a different part of the country. Oh, we don't have service there. So now you have to pay more so that you're not on a roaming plan and get build those extremely high roaming fees. But here's the problem. Let's backstep a little bit and see how did this all begin. Once upon a time in the United States, we had the best phone service in the world. It was called AT&T, and once upon a time, there was a judge that came along and broke it up. That seemed to be good for competition. It spurred incentive and development of products, but now the companies, the 8 or 10 companies which exist out there and are competing for your communication dollars, are putting products out that are not tested. Phones don't last very long. You call up for service and you wait on hold and you wait on hold, and when you finally get somebody, they go, oh, that's a different department, and they switch you over to someone else. Half the time they don't speak English. And then when you try and get about halfway through your conversation, the phone goes dead. I know all of you are understanding what I'm saying. You've all been through this experience. So how on earth could this situation, where we once had the most cohesive telecommunication system in the world, anybody could call anybody, and with picking up a phone, and now we have a situation where you can go to some part of the country and your phone doesn't work. You can go to a foreign country and your phone doesn't work there. The standards, all of this, in my history, I worked in the telecommunications industry a long time ago in computing telecommunications for computers, for other types of communications, and there were standards. Now there are, the companies make up their standards, they change them willy-nilly, and the real loser here is the consumer. The consumer is being thrown into a maze, an absolute jungle of offerings, of products, of solutions, many of them that are going to be very short-lived solutions. Companies are offering in false advertising. They're saying they have certain types of high-speed new networks, and they really don't. Or if they do, they don't have the ability to cover all of the traffic that would come through those networks if everybody picked up and tried to use it at one time. So the situation is that we have a big mess in the United States and around the world in terms of communication, and the cost of this mess is extreme. The companies, here's something I'm sure many people don't think about. Let's imagine, just for the sake of argument, there are six major cell phone companies in the United States. Okay, imagine the inefficiency of having six separate companies. You have six separate groups that go out and repair. You have six separate groups that service these. You have six separate groups of executives. And you have six separate groups of financial departments in the repetition. So what happens? It's just like the airline companies. They start to merge. They start to come together, in the process destroying the lives of many of the employees who have worked there for decades, building up these companies, working hard, and all of a sudden their lives are turned upside down because they just have no idea where their future will lie. Some are laid off. The companies depended on these employees. The employees worked hard, and all of a sudden their futures are in jeopardy. This is a mess from all angles. And the corporations are competing viciously one against the other to try and get your business. It's a tremendous, what I would call overall, it's a tremendous failure. And telecommunications is something that is core and central to our very existence. It's like a horse in the Old West. We need it. It's not just a matter of chatting with somebody now and then. You need good, sound, secure telecommunications. There's a lot of, if you look on the internet, there are a lot of telecommunications companies that are billing with false billing. They're putting bills on statements or claims of bills on people's accounts or changing their plan without telling them. There's all kinds of things, you might call them dirty tricks. Once again, the consumer is the loser. And it's just literally out of control. And the cost is out of control, and we don't have good telecommunications. So the end result is that there are really no winners here. The companies are not winning. The competition is fierce. And as a result, we don't have good, sound communications at a reasonable price. That's the bottom line. So at any rate, it's a topic that I'll be talking about from time to time. And there are actually solutions to this, but the solutions are going to come with a price, as with anything. The solutions are not going to be fun and easy for the industry, let's put it that way. And many people in the industry already know what the solution is. I'll be talking about that in future installments, but right now I just want you to consider the telecommunications mess in the United States. It's much like the energy mess, where we have people who own and manage the energy mess in the United States, and at the central part of this is the government that allows this to happen. In the case of energy, most energy policy is created by the energy companies. We all know that from the Enron scandal, and many people knew this already. The energy commissions in Washington, the energy agencies, are run by the coal, nuclear, and oil industries. They actually write policy. There's no reason why there should be $4 per gallon gasoline in the United States when you can get it for 16 cents a gallon in Venezuela, who's selling it at that price to China. The United States cannot, the citizens of the United States cannot withstand the gouging That's just energy, and everything that's transported has to have a higher price because of the high cost of energy. Farmers can't plant their crops because the cost of energy is too high. They can't make a profit. So which is going to drive up food prices, and which literally starves people around the world who can't afford. When the price of rice, when the price of corn goes up in the United States, that drives up rice prices around the world, and people literally starve to death because they can't afford food. And there's no control on this. The communications industry is going the same route, in that it's an absolute train wreck disaster. As I said, you pay a lot of money, you get terrible service, and the repetition of services, goods and services, causes the prices of what you're paying for to go extremely high. So breaking up A&T, in a sense, was a good thing. It was good for industry. It was good for innovation. But it got out of control, and the companies that were supposed to interleave and work with one another, that simply went by the wayside. We used to have public utility commissions which ran and set rates, and now there are still public utility commissions, but they're just a token. They're a token out there because the companies are private companies. Nobody controls them. There's no PUC that really oversees what they do, controls prices, or anything else. So at any rate, the situation, like many man-made organizations, it had good intentions when it started, but it has gone awry, amok, and afoul. And it is, as I said, the citizens of the United States are the real losers in this game of trying to provide communications. So at any rate, I will be talking more about that in the future. Let's see. Well, let me look through a couple of the other topics. One of them here that I saw this past week, there is a new technique, an infrared satellite images. They're discovering pyramids and bunkers and graves in Egypt. Now, I just wanted to mention that this same technology could be used to determine where people are in caves or in hiding or in dwellings, because that's the type of resolution they have with these satellites. So at any rate, I'm about out of time here. About a half a minute left. I just want to remind you, go to the webpage jmccsci.com, short for jmccanniscience.com. And as I said before, your orders support this commercial-free radio show. And appreciate the listeners. It's wonderful when I talk to them. I'm out of time. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.